everybody. Welcome back to another episode of On The Mix. I'm your host, Lindsay. And this week, I thought I would take it in a massively different direction. I'm sure a lot of you guys know, I would imagine, the two biggest heavy metal bands back in the 80s and the 90s, respectively, that owned pretty much the music sphere, the music realm, and were at the top of the charts for those decades. And to be honest, even henceforth now, they are massively popular. Metallica and Megadeth. But did you guys know that the two bands share something in common, or more so, someone in common? Dave Mustaine, the guitarist and singer for Megadeth, and who also was the original guitarist for Metallica. Yes, he was in both bands. It's very fascinating because we would not have one without the other. The two are synonymous. But there is still, at some aspect, a rivalry between both bands. And I'm going to share with you the nitty-gritty of why Dave Mustaine was fired from Metallica and how, in a sort of almost like revenge scheme, how he created Megadeth and how he became even more popular after forming Megadeth. Because both Megadeth and Metallica, like I said, massively famous bands, massively popular bands that are still popular to this day. But I don't think a lot of people know that the two are synonymous. So if you don't know who Dave Mustaine is, well, let me tell you. So if you've seen Dave Mustaine, you definitely know him because just from his looks alone, he's a very unique character. He is tall. He had very long, long, flowing, ginger, wavy hair, and he was always shredding on his guitar, and he had a very, still does, a very distinct singing voice. Let's dive deep into who Dave Mustaine is, and how did he even come across Metallica and join them in the first place? Well, Dave was born on September 13th, so he had a birthday a couple days ago, 1961 in La Mesa, California. His parents are Emily and John Mustaine. His father was of French, German, Irish, and Finnish descent, and his mother was of German Jewish ancestry. And the entire family were Jehovah's Witnesses, of which I never knew that before. That's quite interesting, considering that he would go on to have a very illustrious music career and he was a Jehovah's Witness. Similarly, I guess, to Prince, he was also a Jehovah's Witness. But I suppose you wouldn't expect that, like, the two would kind of go hand in hand with each other. But I just thought that was an interesting fact to share. Dave had three older sisters that ranged in a lot of ages. Like, when he was born, I believe one sister was, like, 3. Another sister was, like, 15. And another one was close to, like, 18 years old. So due to the significance in ages between him and his sisters, when he was young, he often thought of them as aunts rather than sisters. And that makes sense. I mean, when you're born and you have one sister that's practically graduating high school, going off into college, yeah, that would actually make sense. I understand that for sure. So he had a very dysfunctional family. And he's described his family life as tumultuous, especially during his early life, most predominantly because his father was an avid drinker. While he was successful, he was a branch manager for Bank of America at the time. Dave has said that his father was good with his hands and he had a good head on his shoulders in terms of he was smart. But he was a raging alcoholic, a massive alcoholic, and his alcoholic tendencies only grew worse because he was let go from his job when they replaced the people for the machines. So it also got worse when his wife, Emily, divorced him in 1965. So only 4 years, Dave was only around for 4 years and then his parents got divorced. So that really puts a damper on things for sure. And he wasn't super close with his family from that point on, so I think he didn't really care about all that stuff. But music was always the light of his life. And Dave's first band that he would form was a band called Panic. And in this band, the first song that Dave ever wrote was a song called Jump in the Fire, which would later be released as the second and final single from Metallica's debut album called Kill 'Em All. So this is in the time period where a lot of the songs that he was writing would actually end up on Metallica's debut album, which there's a bit of disparaging information and some really hard feelings that come across from that that I'll get into a little bit down the road here. I'm just setting the scene up for you guys. So Panic did not last that long, as you can imagine, but a lot of other songs that he would write for this band Panic would end up being reused for Megadeth down the road as well too, including a song called N2RHQ, which he would rename to Hangar 18, Megadeth's most popular song of all time. I think everybody knows that song, and if I'm not mistaken, that was on one of the Guitar Heroes. So everybody, no matter if you like heavy metal or you don't, you know Hangar 18. You know that song anyway. So it's mad that he had all these songs and a lot of them would end up on Kill 'Em All and some of his Megadeth albums in the future. So that's really cool. In 1981, Mustaine would end up disbanding the band Panic, and he found an ad in a local newspaper called The Recycler where this small band called Metallica was looking for a lead guitarist. So the drummer, Lars Ulrich, he put the ad in the paper, and Dave happened to see this, and he was like, oh my god, hell yeah, this is my opportunity. So Dave remembers his first meeting with James Hetfield and Lars, where he said this: I was in the room warming up, and I walked out and asked, well, am I gonna audition or what? And they said, no, you've got the job. And he says, I couldn't believe how easy it had been and suggested that we get some beer to celebrate. So I guess he just had the look. So I think they just liked the way that he looked and he got the job. Perfect. Well, Metallica began recording their first album, Kill 'Em All, in 1983. But problems already arose within the group surrounding Dave Mustaine. So the apple, unfortunately, does not fall too far from the tree. His father was a big drinker. Dave was also a big drinker, so it seems like the alcoholic gene got carried and passed down to Dave, because Dave liked a bit of the booze, let's just say that. And when Dave drinks, he's not necessarily the nicest of people. He can get a bit mad and angry, so some would maybe say that he would be a raging alcoholic, but unfortunately, he would do things that might not have been the best. But in his defense, there is a situation of which Metallica is 1000% at fault, and I will never forgive them for this if I was Dave Mustaine. So basically, how this goes is, you know, Dave would just end up drinking all of the time. Why? Because he could all the time. So there is one occasion in particular that kind of spiraled the whole issue of them having problems with Dave. Dave would end up bringing his dog to rehearsal sometimes. That wasn't usually a massive problem, but I guess maybe this dog wasn't trained or anything, I don't know. But the dog ended up jumping onto the car of bassist Ron McGovney and scratched the paint, God forbid, like as if the dog knew that he was scratching the paint of this car. And James Hetfield goes ballistic out of nowhere, allegedly yelled at Dave's dog. And he went further than just yelling at the dog. He ended up kicking the dog, apparently in a fit of rage, which provoked Dave into physically attacking James Hetfield, of which that is so warranted, because it doesn't matter if my dog jumps on your car and scratches the paint of your friend's car. Like, that gives you no right at all to yell at my dog and kick my dog. So I'm gonna kick you instead. Like, that is so justified. Dave is justified in that situation for me particularly. James Hetfield has no leg to stand on there. So because of this incident, Dave was fired. But the next day, Dave asked to be allowed back into the band and was brought back in. So they were like, yeah, okay, whatever. Great. Honest to God, if I were Dave at that point, I'd be like, I am not crawling on my hands and knees back to these people because they yelled at my dog and they kicked my dog. And they treated my dog like shit, so why would I go back to these people? They're assholes, right? It doesn't matter that they're gonna be one of the biggest heavy metal bands of all time and sell 1,000,001 albums and all that crap. Like, it doesn't really matter at all. Well, like, you don't do that, you know? That's just so inhumane to do. But he was allowed back into the band. And then another incident occurred that kind of set the tone for them having even more problems. Dave, who was drunk at this time, poured a can of beer down the neck of Ron's base. So Ron claimed that he was unaware of the damage and that he received an electric shock upon plugging his base into the amplifier. Dave, however, denied this, stating that Ron was present when he poured beer down the neck of his base, and Ron didn't attempt to plug in his base after because he saw it happen. So it's a bit of a he said moment here. Ron then told Dave, regardless of what happened, Ron told Dave and James to leave his house, and Ron ended up leaving the band shortly after. So, you know, I really don't blame Ron either. I mean, first you have Dave's dog that scratches the paint of your car, which is stupid and annoying, but like, you know, whatever, that's his problem. And then also, yeah, this Dave guy, yeah, he pours beer down my bass and he messes it up. Now he's got to pay me for another bass because he ruined it, essentially. So yeah, it makes a lot of sense that he just couldn't handle it anymore and he wanted to leave. I completely understand, but tensions were just arising even more, and it was still yet again at this point where they were recording their first album. They had not released it yet. They were recording music for it. The rehearsals and the demos for the album he was on, he was doing background vocals, he was doing his guitar parts, he was writing songs. He wrote, I believe, about four songs, or co-wrote them, roughly four songs for the debut album. So regardless of all of that, though, this is where things would come to a head. A tete-a-tete happened here. Metallica had driven to New York to record their debut album. And this is April 11th, 1983. While they were in New York, Dave was asleep in his bed, chilling. And he was woken up by the rest of the band. And they gave him no reason for what they did, no nothing. All they said was, pack up your shit and leave, you're out of this band. And Dave was so confused, naturally, because he wasn't understanding of like what happened, and the band wasn't giving him any real legitimate answer or explanation as to why. I mean, I think one could presume, of course, that like, oh, well, based upon how you acted previously in this band while you were drinking, that's the reason why. But of course, they weren't explaining that. I think they just wanted Dave to like, you know, piece it together himself, essentially, and just be like, you go figure it out. You've got your own problems. You go figure it out. So Metallica packed up Dave's stuff and they drove him to the Port Authority bus terminal, and they said, you are not getting on an airplane. You are riding on a bus for 4 days back to Los Angeles from New York City. Can you imagine that? Like, they didn't even give him like the courtesy of like, here's a plane ticket, get out of here. They literally said, get on this Greyhound bus, drive for 4 days down to Los Angeles and good luck. I think that's like, that's so hardcore that they did that to him. Like, and according to Dave, yet again, this just happened out of nowhere. They gave him no rhyme, no reason, no cause, no nothing for this. So Dave was upset. And this kind of sparks the decades-long feud between Dave Mustaine / Megadeth and Metallica, because while they had issues, you know, in those first 2 years, 2 to 3 years of him being in Metallica, you know, I think they were still trying to make it work, but unfortunately, I think it came down to maybe Dave being a bit of a recluse, and especially being a massive recluse while he was drinking and doing things, dumb things that maybe he shouldn't have done, or going into bits of rage and all of that stuff while he was drinking. Fair enough, I would be kind of annoyed as well. But at the same time, I think like they were totally like clearly fed up with Dave Mustaine that they just literally packed his ass on a bus back to LA. They didn't even drive him to like the airport so he can buy a plane ticket. They literally just drove him to the bus stop and they were like, okay, bye. Like, so they just really didn't give a fuck about Dave Mustaine clearly at this point, which is unfortunate. Because Dave clearly has taken, I don't know how I want to describe this, but Dave has really taken a hard stance on this whole split with him and Metallica. He was not happy, and he still necessarily isn't really happy, but I think he's softening up over the years. He still has a bit of like a sore spot for them and how that all went down, because I think for him it could have went down a lot differently. And of course, Dave is a lot more sensible now. He has a family and children now, so he's not doing those crazy antics like he used to do. But also at the same time, like, Metallica were not like angels either. They were also doing similar things as well. So I think it's just they just clearly could not get on with Dave Mustaine at all, which is fair because this kind of had to happen this way. If Dave Mustaine had stayed in Metallica, Kirk Hammett would not have come through and, as Dave Mustaine put it, replaced him in the band. But also, Dave Mustaine would never have created Megadeth. So this kind of all needed to happen. But unfortunately, even though Dave Mustaine knows this, at the same time, I think he is still very not happy with how the split happened. So Dave is on this Greyhound bus bound for Los Angeles. He's got 4 days to sit and fester and like think about everything that's gone on. And he's just kind of sitting there like seething, you know. So he miraculously, crazily enough, saw this political postcard he picked up on the way back home to LA, where the words were, "The arsenal of Megadeth can't be rid." Now, he saw this and he was like, "Megadeth, Megadeth, that would be a great name for a band." And he particularly changed the spelling so that it's death without the A. So that became very unique and synonymous with him, of course. I think that's just like another sign from the universe that this was meant to happen, because they literally put that in Dave Mustaine's lap and he bought it, the postcard, and he saw that and he says, yeah, you know what? That's perfect. But not only did he see the future band name that he would use for his most famous band on this postcard serendipitously, but on this bus ride home, again, he had 4 days to sit and do nothing and fester and think about this. He scribbled some lyrics down on the back of a handbill, which later became the lyrics for the song Set the World Afire from the Megadeth album So Far, So Good, So What, which would come out in 1998. So he's doing a whole lot of good things for himself here. I'm liking this, you know, he's trying his best to move forward. And, you know, we'll see that in a little bit here as he tries to kind of find a new normal for himself. But this is from Dave's own words of what he says about the breakup. He says, "The thing that really upsets me was that they never gave me a warning and I never got a second chance. It was just, hey man, you're out, see you later. I was driven by revenge. I was angry about what happened with Metallica, and all the way home, I kept thinking, I'll just be faster, I'll be better, and my songs will be heavier. I had been physically reckless, and there had been a lot of pushing and shoving on my part with everybody in the band. I was very unpredictable, and I embarrassed everyone around me. I still look back on those times as mostly fun, but usually the time when I would start to get to the point where violence would occur was when I was heading towards a blackout. That continued long after I left Metallica, and it was the main reason why, in 1988, I decided I'm gonna stop. It just took a long fucking time to get the train slowed down." So that's what he says from his own perspective were the reasons why he believes everything kind of came to a head with Metallica. And he takes accountability for himself and his actions, which is huge. I think if he was to just say, oh, it's their problem, it's their fault, and it's nothing to do with me, I think that would really show that he has a lack of self-awareness. But he clearly has a massive amount of self-awareness with the fact that he can see that his drinking habits were what kind of caused the problem. But again, at the same time, like I said, like Metallica are no angels either. They also kind of did that too. So I think for Dave particularly, like he said, like he got violent when he would be heading towards like a blackout, drunk kind of moment, where he would forget what would happen, which sucks even more because like he would then forget what even happened because he would black out during it and the band would be like, you don't remember doing this or that? And Dave would be like, no, what do you mean? So it just kind of is very like, it's a very unfortunate happenstance. And at the same time though, it needed to happen because then we got Megadeth. So in, again, April 1983, Dave finally, after four long days, returned back home to California after the bus journey home. So he went to live with his mom again. And at this time, Dave landed what he considers his first real job with the help of his friend Rob McKinney. So him and his friend Rob McKinney, along with his other friend Matt Kisselstein, worked as telemarketers together before quitting and forming what would be considered the first iteration of Megadeth. So the band was not called Megadeth at this point, they were called Fallen Angels. In his biography, Dave describes, "We lacked the chemistry, the energy, the spark, or whatever you want to call it, that gives a band life in its infancy." So the partnership basically between them didn't last, but this would end up being the initial like kind of formation of Megadeth here. Dave would later end up partnering with Dave Elfson and Greg Handvit. I hope I said these names correctly. So now this would end up being the official start of Megadeth. And how Dave even found Dave Elfson and Greg Handvit is actually pretty interesting. So Dave Elfson and Greg were playing the opening bass line of Van Halen's Running with the Devil in the apartment below Dave Mustaine's. So they lived in the same apartment complex. And Dave was hearing this, and he was stomping on the floor, yelling at them to knock it off, because he had a massive hangover. So he was not interested in hearing the Running with the Devil opening bass line over and over and over again downstairs. So an angry, upset, hungover Dave took a potted plant from his apartment and threw it out the window and hit the air conditioner of the apartment below. So basically, he hit their apartment. So the music stopped. Dave Elfson and Greg, they came up to Dave's apartment and they were like, this guy thinks the guy that threw the potted plant upstairs. Let's go talk to him. So they asked Dave Mustaine if he had any cigarettes. Dave only replied shortly, there's a store on the corner, and he slammed the door in their faces. So they go to the corner store, they get their cigarettes, but they probably thought to themselves, you know what? Let's try to maybe be friends with this guy. Maybe we got off on the wrong foot. Because a few minutes later, both men knocked on Dave's door, and this time they asked if they could buy him a beer. So of course, a hungover Dave and a Dave Mustaine that loves drinking and beer, he's like, okay, now you're talking. So they spent the entire night talking about music and drinking beer, and the rest is history. And that's essentially how we get the early formation of Megadeth. Now, like I said in the beginning, Megadeth is one of the most popular heavy metal bands that we have that's in comparison to Metallica. They both sound very similar to each other, of course, because, you know, the early style of Metallica was inherently Dave Mustaine, but unfortunately, when the debut album Kill 'Em All from Metallica came out, they of course had Kirk Hammett on now, so that ended up being Dave Mustaine's replacement. So nothing that Dave did in terms of his background singing or his guitaring got put on the record, because the whole point was they drove to New York to record the studio album, but Dave got fired beforehand. Regardless of that though, those 2 years that he was with Metallica, they were practicing together, writing material for each other, you know, so Dave was part of the collaborative process for the debut album, but unfortunately, he wasn't in the final cut, of course, because they ended up replacing him with Kirk Hammett. So Dave, yet again, at the same point when he saw this, he was upset because not only was he replaced, but a couple of songs that he wrote for Metallica were used still. So the songs that he had writing contributions for were The Four Horsemen, Jump in the Fire, Phantom Lord, and Metal Mania from their debut album. And then subsequent carryovers, Ride the Lightning and The Call of Cthulhu from the album Ride the Lightning, he contributed to. So he had roughly 6 songs in total that he did for Metallica with writing contributions. It's unfortunate that Dave's contributions kind of got a little bit squandered because he got fired so quickly. I think, though, at the same time, we would have definitely gotten a different Metallica had Kirk Hammett not come along, because Kirk Hammett is very well respected, I think, in terms of being not only an amazing guitarist, but one of the most popular heavy metal musicians of all time, next to Dave Mustaine, probably, I would imagine. So, you know, this is Dave's direct line of competition. So he claims that Kirk Hammett stole his job and ripped off every break that he'd ever played, according to him. But, you know, at the same time, as years have kind of gone on, and like I said, like, you know, the men from Metallica, they've kind of gotten over it and moved on from it. Dave Mustaine, he tries to do his best to move on from it, because at the same time, people are naturally curious, and they ask Dave, and they ask the band all the time about what happened with Dave, and, you know, and the band, and so, you know, there's gonna be crossovers, and there have been crossovers in the past. Predominantly, there's this quote that Dave was talking about in a recent interview from last year, I believe. And Dave said this, I saw the thing with James on stage where he was saying that he was going through a rough patch. I was sad to see that because it's been one of those really weird love-hate relationships. And the whole reason that I ever even pursued any of this was I really liked those guys. If I didn't like them, I would just say, Fucking flush the toilet and be done with it. He's always been somebody that I really liked playing with. I wish things wouldn't have ended the way that they did, but que sera sera. It was a dumb thing that I did by taking my dog up to practice, and it was even dumber to punch James. He says, I really respect him and I respect his playing, and I hope he knows that there are a lot of people out there like me that like him as a person and don't give two fucks about him being in Metallica. So I think that was really cool of Dave Mustaine to say that about James Hetfield. So he was referring to a video from last year where James admitted on stage that he'd been dealing with some anxieties about getting older, apparently. And so Dave saw that video, and so he was commenting on it because he was asked a couple of questions, and he voluntarily brought that up on his own. You know, clearly, I think as these guys get a lot older and they kind of put their life into context and they put a lot of the things that they did from their past to one side, I think we might be able to have a bit of a brotherly love moment, you know, because that is true. Dave has been brought on stage to play with Metallica on the occasion with Kirk Hammett, and I think things are okay, which is nice. But I think people are always going to reference the split between Dave Mustaine and Metallica because that was just like such a massive thing to have happen. But like I said, Metallica was just, you know, an early starting out band. Dave Mustaine was, you know, a young guy. They were all young guys. Shit happens. And unfortunately, he just got kicked to the curb. Was it cool of him to bring his dog to rehearsal? I mean, I think that's the least of anyone's problems. You know, like, I mean, unless the dog was like a rabid dog and he wasn't trained and he was getting in everyone's way, which honestly doesn't sound like the case, but who cares anyway? You know, it's not like a Yoko Ono, John Lennon situation, of which I did a video on that last week. But, you know, it doesn't really matter because it doesn't excuse the fact that James Hetfield verbally abused and physically abused Dave Mustaine's dog. So I will never forgive James Hetfield for what he did to Dave Mustaine's dog. I'll never forgive him for that. I never will. And I'll look at him differently because of that, you know? It doesn't matter the circumstances. You just don't do that. You don't do that to an animal. So I don't really care that Dave Mustaine was seen as like the baddie in the band. I really don't care because you don't do that to an animal. But anyway, I mean, yeah, was it cool for Dave to pour beer down the guitar neck of Ron's bass? No. But at the same time, yet again, I think that's probably the least problematic thing Dave Mustaine could probably do. Musicians that are out there listening to this maybe disagree with me. Maybe they think, no, that's pretty bad, which, okay, I can understand that. Like, yeah, because then you'd have to go out and buy either another amp or another bass. Fair enough. I get it. But at the same time, like, I'm just putting into perspective, like, I think the things that Dave probably did were not as bad as they could have been. I think Dave Mustaine could have been a lot worse. So I think the fact that he was fired so abruptly and they literally didn't even like give him a plane ticket or drive him to the airport, they literally dropped him off at a bus terminal and was like, okay, good luck, bye, never see you again. And so Dave was just kind of festering on those 4 long days, stopping where he could to probably scrounge up money to stay at a hotel somewhere and eat when he could. He was literally by himself trying to get back home, so he had 4 days to think about everything. And on those 4 days, he clearly had a plan. So when he came back, he was really trying to, in a sort of, like he said, in a revenge sort of way, like be bigger and better because the competition was already there, you know? And I think in a way it is friendly competition. You know, I think the competition kind of evoked some really good things about Dave Mustaine in terms of creating bigger, better sounds and doing the best that he could. And Dave wasn't even supposed to be a singer for Megadeth. He was auditioning people for Megadeth, and it just wasn't going well. So he didn't want to be the singer because he thought he wasn't a good singer, but he took on the role when no one else really could fill in that perfect mold of the singer. So, I mean, again, I think, you know, Dave is so inspiring with how he can sing and then shred so hard at the same time. He's awesome. Like if you have not seen any live footage of Megadeth or any music videos, I'd highly recommend that you do. I think it's required watching and required listening as well. So that's essentially the story about how Dave Mustaine was fired from Metallica and how he formed Megadeth out of revenge, which I think that's the best kind of revenge because now Dave Mustaine actually has a very flourishing career in Megadeth and he created one of the most popular heavy metal bands of all time. And he was in the other most influential heavy metal band of all time. So Dave Mustaine, he's doing pretty good for himself, despite, yes, being fired from Metallica. It had to happen. So I think all in all, you know, the chips fell where they did, and I think overall the story ended up being a positive one, because now we have Metallica with James Hetfield and with Kirk Hammett and everyone else doing the most amazing work there. And now we have Megadeth with Dave Mustaine doing what he's doing. And I think everyone's doing good. So thank you guys very much for listening. I hope that you guys learned something new today that you hadn't known about before. And I will see you guys next Wednesday with another episode of On The Mix. Feel free to follow me on Instagram or Threads at On The Mix Podcast. And if you'd like to monetarily support the podcast so I can keep funneling good things out into this podcast, then the links for all of that will be down below in the description. If you'd like to tip or donate one time, or if you'd like to do a sort of monthly subscription, sort of almost like a Spotify type situation to the podcast, all of that, again, down below in the description. So thank you guys very much. I'll see you guys next Wednesday. Have a wonderful day, and I'll see you guys later. Bye, guys.